there are times when you've got to get under the skin of the detail. The danger about being in a job like mine is you're detached from reality and you live in an ivory tower. So you need to find those ways of knowing what's really happening.
Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object Podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, the creative effectiveness ad tech platform. And this is a weekly show about the future of data-driven marketing. And every week I get to interview one of our industry's leaders about their vision for this industry. And today is unbelievably special. I'm sat here in the beautiful and serene Halcyon Bar at Diageo One HQ, which is a lovely bar and sort of conference sort of space on top of their building on Great Marlborough Street. And I've been invited here by Mark Sands, who's Chief Innovation Officer. So, Mark, thank you. And for anyone who doesn't know who you are and what you do, can you give us a bit of background?
Thanks very much for having me on the podcast, Tom. So, my name's Mark Sands. I am now Chief Innovation Officer at Diageo. I've worked for Diageo for a long time. I was graduate trainee back in 1997. Started actually in Diageo the day after Princess Diana died, to put it in its full historical context. And I worked in a number of different roles around the world for Diageo, mostly in marketing and commercial roles, beginning in London, but then went off on an odyssey that's taken me to Dublin, to Russia, to Singapore, and then back to Dublin again, which is where I still live. And the nature of my role now is an absolutely fascinating one. I look after innovation across all of our categories, all of our countries, for now and for the future as well. And I tend to describe my accountability, what my job is, as shaping the future of the way that people socialize.
It's just casual. Just, yeah, just.
That's why that's what I do. Yeah.
So shaping the way that people socialize, right? So help me understand the remit a bit better. So is that actually new product development as well as marketing, as well as like on and off trade? What's the breadth of that?
Yeah, by setting out that vision of being a bit of a higher order vision, one step further away from selling liquids in bottles, what we're trying to do is broaden our scope of innovation. Now, of course, a lot of what we do is finding the new whiskies, the new ways that people are going to be enjoying tequila in the future. But also, I think if we were only focused on quite a narrow view of what our category does, it can ignore some of really the sort of the bigger spaces that our brands can step into. And so we've introduced a team that we call the Breakthrough Innovation Team. And their job is all about innovation that's not liquids in bottles. It's about platforms, not products, we call it. And that includes things like understanding how AI can help to predict people's flavor choices to help them choose the right whiskey, for example, or even seeing how the future of our category through areas like non-alcoholic versions of our brands is going to evolve out into the future.
So what would you say is the best investment of your own time, energy, or money in your own career?
It's a great question, Matt. And you know, the word that I connected to the most from that was energy. And it reminded me of a session that I did with the Guinness team that I was part of before stepping into this role. Based in Dublin, we actually went to Munster Rugby, who were, they were doing a sort of session with business leaders where you spend a day with their nutritionist, their sports psychologist, their strength and conditioning team. And it's all about trying to bring sort of high performance sport into the workplace. And I'm a big rugby fan. I've always been quite active. I found the whole thing fascinating. But there was one thing that I took from that, and I think it was 7 years ago that we did it, and I've done it every week since then. And what the advice was from actually one of the Munster players was, your week is always busy. And if you plan in your time to exercise last, if you plan in the other stuff first, you're never going to do it. And that was my life beforehand. I was always thinking, oh, I must get out for a run, or I must go to the gym, and then never quite getting there. And what I've done since that session is every Monday morning, I plan out when is going to be my exercise time during the week ahead? My favorite exercise time is to do it at 11 o'clock in the morning. I always start the day pretty early. I'm at my desk by 7. I'll do a few hours work. 11 o'clock is a great time to sort of get out and freshen up and wake up a little bit. And the difference that it's made to just kind of how much energy I've got and me feeling like I'm at my best all of the time. And it's something I always talk about with my team. Firstly, to remind everyone, you've got a bit more control over your diary than you think you have. So make sure you're setting out your day in a way that works for you. Understand when you're at your best or when your best thinking time is, or what's that time of the day when you're quite good at just getting through all the admin stuff, and make sure that you structure things around that. And what works for me won't work for other people. Everyone's got different responsibilities, different, you know, rhythms of the day when they're feeling better or worse. But just be choiceful about how you structure your day to make sure you're at your best more often.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm the same. Like, I think for me, a lot of it is about your belief in yourself, right? And one of my affirmations every day is like, you love exercise. You love finding new excuses to be active and to do things. You know, daughter started school recently and I was like, right, no, my wife doesn't work. But I was like, I'm going to do the school run. And literally it's a run now. I push you in the bucket and then run back. But it's like always looking for that extra bit you can do.
I got overtaken on a park run by someone pushing a double buggy recently. Like, honestly, as an aging moment, it was hard.
So one thing, not so much on the topic of the podcast, but I don't know if it's all business, but certainly our industry, which is the only one I've got that much experience of, is it's sort of fixated with high performance with sport. You know, I can't remember the name of the guy, but it was the marginal gains thing in
Dave Brailsford, the 2012
Olympics.
Yeah.
And you listen to that stuff, marginal gains. You're coming back in the office and you're like, oh, he's right, marginal gains. And then someone drops 150 slide PowerPoint and you're just like, obviously there's a lot of chaos in sport, but it's like, right, you've got to get more numbers on the board than that other team, right? And so I wonder, how do you stop yourself being sort of sucked into a bit of a red herring? Because Olympic cycling is not marketing at all, but yet we're sort of drawn to it thinking, yeah, marginal gains, yeah, we do know. So I'm curious to know, like, how you synthesize two very different worlds in a way that's actually useful to your team, other than just puffing up everyone with some inspirational stories about things that went well.
I think when I was younger, I was fully on that kind of sports storytelling drug and using that all the time. And I suppose one of the things I've learned over the time is some people really connect with that and some people really don't. And so actually learning to find different ways of looking outside of our business to learn things that we can draw on is something that I've really learned from. Occasionally when I'm here in London, I like going around the Royal Academy of Arts and occasionally just sort of looking at exhibitions. And again, just finding a different perspective, somewhere that you're free from your desk, you're free from that 150-page PowerPoint, and suddenly, you know what it's like? Your brain just makes different connections and you start thinking about things that otherwise wouldn't have occurred to you. And so it can happen in lots of different ways, but I think that importance of giving yourself space to think in different ways that's what's most important.
Yeah, anecdotally, that's the joy of doing this podcast, right? So you're forcing yourself to see the world from someone else's position every week, which has a kind of similar job. So what is your most oft given bit of data-driven marketing advice? So when you're coaching or mentoring or talking on stage, what is that bit of advice you find yourself bubbles up to the surface most often that you share, that you know works?
I think my piece of data-driven marketing advice I give most often is zoom in and zoom out. And what I mean by that is there are times when you've got to get under the skin of the detail, really know what's happening and really see what are those small things that make a difference. And you can do that in the data. Like, I've always been one to love getting into the P&L or getting into the Nielsen data. And you can also do it in small ways. I've always started the day by looking on social media of just searching hashtag Guinness, hashtag Smirnoff, just seeing what people are saying. And of course, it gets to you in the end. You read it in your social listening reports and so on. But there's something really immediate about seeing new things that are popping up and seeing the way that people put our brands into their lives as well. And so that zooming in into those details really makes a difference. And I also think you can zoom in real life too. Like I'm a little bit old school, but I really like walking around the pubs, bars and restaurants where our brands are displayed, doing that in Lagos as well as in London, and staying in touch with the salespeople that have taken you around there to hear what they're seeing. Because the danger about being in a job like mine is you're detached from reality and you live in an ivory tower. So you need to find those ways of knowing what's really happening. But of course, if you're only zooming in, then you can be myopic and just, you know, not seeing the bigger picture. And therefore, actually finding mechanisms and ways of zooming out to a much bigger picture. So sort of out of our business, either into big quant data or consumer overviews, or even just a sense of what's happening in culture outside of our business, allows you to then connect up the small details that you zoom into with that sense of a bigger picture that can give you perspective.
I love the idea of you sitting there in your pants in the morning looking up what people are saying about Guinness and Smirnoff and social listening. That's a fantastic story. So we're going to move on now. I would love to know more about that, maybe another time. But your shiny new object is the distilled report. So can you tell the people listening to this podcast specifically what is the purpose, what is the distilled report, and maybe how they can get hold of it?
Distilled is a consumer trends report that we've pulled together at Diageo using something that we call the Foresight System. So it's using AI-generated ways of exploring what are the fastest growing and most important macro trends for the future, looking at the way in which consumer behavior is going to change that's not necessarily related to the way that they consume our brands, but is much broader than that. And it lays out these five big spaces that we think are most likely ways in which consumer behavior will evolve over, say, 5-10 years. But also then what we try to do is work back from that with ways in which brands can start to leap on that trend and use it to improve their work. We describe those as different kind of ways into the trend that our brands can use. But we also decided to publish it so that other brand owners can look at it. And that in itself has been a huge learning for us to get that out in the open.
So a couple of things. Why did you share that? Why isn't this sort of like in some, you know, Johnny Walker safe somewhere in, you know, 7 floors underground? Why would you share that with the industry?
Do you know, it is something that we talked about for a little while. And I'm really pleased that we did take the decision to publish it, because actually what's happened since then is I've had loads of people getting in contact with me, sparking off thoughts of what their brands are doing, partnerships that we could be doing, and different connections to make. And, you know, it's non-proprietary because of the fact that it is much bigger and broader than the space that our brands operate in. So that's why we wanted to put it out there, both to show the kind of things that we believe in, but also to look for those connections that might sort of serendipitously happen as a result of doing so.
This episode of the Shiny New Object podcast is brought to you in partnership with Madfest. Whether it's live in London or streamed online to the global marketing community, you can always expect a distinctive and daring blend of fast-paced content, startup innovation pitches, and unconventional entertainment from Madfest events. You'll find me causing trouble on stage, recording live versions of this podcast, and sharing a beer with the nicest and most influential people in marketing. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com. It reminds me, you'll probably know this story better than me, but I think it was at the end of the First World War, the US Army and Navy like commissioned a similar sort of report. Like, what's the future of war going to be?
Grim
topic. And they're like, well, it's going to be, you know, nuclear weapons and jet engines. And then it kind of wrote its own future.
Yeah.
Like they sort of said, well, it's all going to be about these two things. Well, we should probably invest in them. And, you know, those happened for good and very bad at times. But is it a bit like that? Are you sort of writing what the future is going to be with this? Because if Diageo say it, if Mark Sand says it, then, you know, the breweries across the world or distillers across the world are going to go, right, well, Diageo said it's going to be about X, Y, Z, that we need to gear up for that. Is that? And then you've automatically got a head start on them because you're already doing it. Is that part of the play?
That is part of the play in the sense of, like, I wouldn't overestimate the role that we play in the world. Partly what we're doing is try to see the big trends that are affecting consumers and therefore how we can react to them and get ahead of them, rather than saying, like, we ourselves are creating those big trends. But I'd say one of the most impactful ways that we've used this internally is actually with our supply teams, our distilleries and breweries all the way around the world. Because, for example, one of the trends is all about betterment brands. Betterment brands are brands that in some way are making the world a better place. In some ways that relates to things, concepts like inclusion and diversity. Another big area is all about sustainability. And therefore, figuring out the different ways in which consumers are going to expect from our brands has really big implications on our business model, our formats, and therefore the ways that our breweries and canning lines are built. And so to do a session that was all about the future of consumer behavior with our supply teams has been really kind of groundbreaking within Diageo and has led us to make some plans and take some decisions that otherwise we would always have been kind of chasing our tail on.
Right. I'm now starting to see the value of sharing this, because you're kind of raising the tide for the whole industry and leading and inspiring others without sort of conceding any ground specifically. So betterment brands pushing the diversity and sustainability agenda, fantastic. So can you tell me about the other four other macro trends?
Yeah, so four others. They are neo-hedonism. And that is all about finding the joy in everyday moments. You know, something that I think particularly accelerated through COVID, when some of the normal ways in which we might find joy in our lives were kind of closed off for a little while. People spending time in nature. Post-COVID, one of the ways we see that playing out is people making the most of those freedoms again. Lots of people going on holiday. We see it in our business in the rise and return of cocktails. You know, people going out and saying, right, I'm going out for a special night out. I'm going to make this count. And,
Mark, what's your cocktail of choice? Quick answer.
Right now, Negroni. Tanqueray right Negroni.
Just straight up classic.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
But we saw a stat recently that suggests that there are now more consumers will drink cocktails on a night out than drink wine on a night out. And that's a real dynamic of the last few years that's driving that. There are lots of other ways in which that sense of finding joy in our everyday lives, making every experience matter more, I think is a really well-ingrained trend. We also have this another trend called collective belonging. And that's all about how people connect in tribes with a shared belief. And I think one of the most evocative ways that comes out, back to the sport conversation, is the power of the passion that Guinness has been able to connect into with the Guinness Six Nations over the past couple of months. It is such a strong platform for Guinness, the brand and the occasion and the sport fit together so well. And a similar one, which listeners in the UK might not know about so much. Diageo actually owns one of the most widely supported sports teams in the world, an Indian Premier League cricket team called Royal Challenge Bangalore. And the IPL has been going, I think I'm right in saying the IPL has been going for 16 years. RCB have been hugely well supported in that time, but they've never won it. And in the last few years, we, along with some other people, have been pushing for a women's league to be introduced in India. And 2 years ago, that was introduced for the first time. And then on Sunday just gone, RCB won the final. And it was an incredible moment. And of all of the things that we've done in Diageo to promote gender equality, either in the business or with our brands, I think this is the thing that's had the biggest reach, because there were 93 million people that were watching when RCB won on Sunday.
Did you go to the game?
I didn't. I would have loved to go to the game. The atmosphere looks incredible. But no, it was live on Sky Sports here in back home. So I was watching that.
And how did the ownership of RCB come around? That's the new one to me. Was that you own them outright, or a majority investor, or like?
Yeah, we own them outright. We have a whiskey called Royal Challenge in India. So when our ancestor company USL there in India, which we acquired, must have been about 2014, had established the team when the IPL first started.
Right. I used to be an innovation lad myself, and trends have always got fancy names, haven't they? Betterment brands, neo-hedonism, collective belonging. So what else do we have?
So two more. Conscious well-being. And that's all about people looking after themselves. But the nature of that is really interesting, of how that's evolved, because we see it impacting our business with the phenomenal growth of non-alcoholic. You know, for us, things like Guinness 0.0 is absolutely flying. But interestingly, we also see it in an area that you might call self-treating or self-love. And so actually one of our brands that really benefits from that is Baileys. It's one of the brands that for us probably had the biggest growth during the COVID period, because what we were finding were, you know, particularly that period when people were in their homes the majority of the day, people were looking for a little treat in their lives. And whether that was through baking, through treating, or just a glass of Baileys. And we've now seen that really evolve into the post-COVID world, the way that we work with different treat makers and trendsetters within the treating world.
And then finally,
expanded reality. So that's all about how the increasing digital world interacts with our consumer lives. It plays out for us with What's Your Whiskey that I mentioned, that predicts your whiskey choices based on your food preferences. And in consumer conversation, so much of that relates to AI. Is it going to destroy the world? How is it going to impact us? I see, and I read a lot about the way that different innovators and brands and marketers are working with AI. And I feel like all of us are experimenting and need to be experimenting all the time with different use cases. But we're increasingly finding use cases that we're finding really valuable and proving and starting to scale up as well.
I think one of the standout presentations in a marketing sense that I saw last year was Benny Lickfitt talking at Madfest. I don't know if that deck or the video came to you at any point, but the kind of the scale and the ambition and the creativity and the intent, but also the honesty, I thought was really interesting. I think you guys did something on, it was like a metaverse activation and no one could get it to work. And, you know, it was a bit of a disaster, but there was no sort of like brushing this under the carpet. It was like, look, here it is, one of the most significant events in the UK when it comes to marketing. And there was someone on your team, you know, talking about how something didn't work.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was fantastically honest and interesting. The expanded reality is something I've seen quite a lot of. And the way that you guys were using Gen AI to kind of come up with new bottle design concepts, not to complete them, but just to provoke a creative thought.
Yeah.
I thought was interesting. I mean,
and that the cultural impact of that, and I mean cultural in the sense of the dynamic that it has in the meeting room or in the workshop is so powerful. I found with that example, where what we were doing was suddenly we'd be having early stage ideas, and rather than waiting to fully form the idea and then brief a designer and have all of that normal time that would be in the process, it was a stimulus to further thinking, to be saying, right, let's have, we can produce 20 designs of how this might come to life immediately. And that would then spark the creative process. There's this other area that we've been using as well that we find really powerful, that's similar again to that sense of what's your whiskey. We use we work with a great partner actually called AI Palette. And what they're able to do is to predict what are going to be the big flavor trends of either next year, and then also what are the emerging trends that in kind of 3 years' time are going to be really important. And so we recently had the 2024 view of what are going to be the big trends in flavors. And it's so interesting. I've found that since I've heard them, I can't stop seeing them across loads of different categories.
Come on, tell me, what are they?
So two big areas, one that they call Bloom Harvest. So what kind of comes under that are things like...
More fancy names, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. Hibiscus, jasmine, lavender. I see those across lots of different foodstuffs. And also within drinks, we've just launched Smirnoff Ice Lavender Lemonade in Australia. And it's boomed. I read a stat that... search queries for Smirnoff Ice are up by 12,000% since we launched it. And then this second one that's really interesting, which is under the heading of savory umami. So there's things like sea salt. I see sea salt everything at the moment. And things like yuzu and fermented flavors. And that's really interesting for us. We launched Johnny Walker Elusive Umami in October, and I actually think it's of all the whiskies we've maybe not ever made, but certainly of all the Diageo whiskies that I've tasted, I think that is my favorite ever.
Really? We'll have one after. That'd be great. Brilliant. That's that decided. Okay, so then what do you do with this? So you've got Bloom Harvest, savory umami, and you're like, how do you activate that kind of intelligence, right? Because everyone else has that intelligence. Pernod have got that, Campari, Grant, they've all got this intelligence. How is the C-suite coming to you? Well, you're on the C-suite going, look, we need to make the most of these trends. Are you kind of like, you got factories of innovators cranking through all of these different variants at different times, non-alcoholic versions, different serves, different temperatures for different markets? How do you act on that? It sounds fascinating, but how do you deliver on it?
There's so much to talk about under that question. One thing I would say is we've got an unbelievable team of R&D scientists, and also our distillers and brewers who are brilliant at taking those trends and turning those into fantastic liquids. But for us to be successful in innovation, it's more than just being able to spot the trend or even hear what is the most trending flavor. It's bringing that to life in a way that has a consumer gift or a bit of consumer magic to make it all kind of fit together. And not all of that can be about just immediately reacting, particularly if you think by the nature of the purchase cycle and also in a way kind of the manufacturing cycle of a lot of our categories. So we talk about having five categories that are our forever categories, meaning we're always going to be wanting to be innovating in them and we need to be ahead of the curve. Things like Scotch whiskey and tequila, both of which either spend a lot of time in a barrel or a lot of time in the ground in the case of agave plants. So you've got to be well planned out. But also things like how we're going to use technology with Guinness dispense, things like Guinness Nitro Surge and Microdraft that have been really successful for us. How we can bring cocktails to the world in a way that create better and better experiences for consumers. And then also in the non-alc space as well, which again, it takes a lot of time to get those liquids absolutely perfect. And we like to have a rule of thumb that about 80% of our pipeline is planned out so that we can be speaking to retailers in advance, so that we can be laying down the right stock. But we also leave 20% of space to be able to respond to things that are happening in culture or that our competitors do as well.
So of all the innovation jobs there are in the world, and for the things that you shared, it sounds exciting. It sounds ideal. It sounds like a lot of fun. There's a bit of travel in there as well. You know, and the entertainment category is definitely one that's based around pleasure. So it's a fun place to work. You know, it's a fun thing to be in. But can you honestly tell me what scares the shit out of you? Like, what is the thing where you're just like, you know, like, because there's somebody, you give me a lot of positives here. What are the negatives in the role? When it comes to these things that you're talking about with such passion and conviction, where are your like, oh, moments with this job?
Well, that's a great question. There's quite a few, Tom, to be honest. There's a relentlessness about innovation that is both exhilarating and terrifying. And so it's really different from, say, managing one of our big brands. That brand is still going to exist the next year. You're building on it. You're growing it. But our job as innovators is for every year to be thinking, okay, what's the new innovation that we're bringing that doesn't exist yet, that is going to deliver what we need to in terms of the business, and also is going to deliver the right level of risk for us. Because if all of our innovation is too predictable and too safe, then it's actually not doing what we need it to do, of doing that job of really shaping the way that people socialize. So that constant, you're starting every year, starting the planning for the years ahead with an empty bucket that you need to fill up with great ideas. So I feel like that's probably the thing that keeps me awake at night the most.
And so you talk about the right level of risk, which is really interesting from an innovation perspective. So what have you said no to? Because I'll tell you a story. I interviewed at the time, he was a guy who was the CMO of Red Bull in Europe. And I was on stage and with him at a conference, and I'd say, like, what is the one crazy thing that Red Bull never did that you wanted to? And he said that, you know, like, get like, I don't know much about aeroplanes, a jumbo jet, like a big people carrier plane. He said that technically, you could do a barrel roll, you know, spin it round like that way. There's the aerodynamics, a plane would survive that, but they could never get it signed off with insurance, like, yeah, you know, for all the obvious reasons. But he spoke to some like crazy pilot. He said, yeah, it's fine. Of course, I'll do this afternoon, whatever. Yeah. So what are the things that you've had to say no to where you're just like, no, that's too crazy or wild or whatever? Like, what have you respectfully declined?
We haven't tried the serving our drinks on a barrel rolling jumbo. We've looked at a lot of different new and quite spectacular different formats for the way that our drinks are dispensed. You know, if you think if you walk into a bar or restaurant around the world, mostly what happens is someone picks up a bottle and pours it into a glass. And whilst that's convenient when you're at home, it doesn't have to be like that in a bar or restaurant. So we tried at a concept level lots of different ways of looking at that. And it's interesting that either we've ended up saying no to them or none of them have stuck. But that's something that we're still after, particularly now with the importance of recycling, reusing and sustainability. We think that's maybe the extra impetus that is going to find the right way of kind of cracking that.
So is that an open invitation to listeners of this podcast to come to reach out to you? Like, how can we serve liquid in a new way that's more sustainable?
It's more sustainable and still does the job of looking great behind the bar, so that consumers can see it there. So yeah, absolutely. That's an open brief. But you know what I spend more time saying no to is the easy stuff. So for example, at times we've done too many limited editions, too many of the next safe or predictable extension of our existing brands. And actually once you're on that cycle, then you're just running to stand still, because if your innovation's not lasting, then you're lapping it the next year and having to do more of the same and so on. So actually getting the balance right, there is a role for that stuff. When you do it right, it can drive fame, it can drive kind of excitement amongst our retail customers, but you just can't overdo it. So get it, pulling back on some of that stuff and getting the balance right between the riskier, less predictable innovation that's offset by some of that short-term innovation that can pay the bills for that long-term stuff. Like, that's the magic if you can get that balance right.
Mark, I'm really frustrated that we're going to have to leave it there. I feel we just glossed over the report. How can people get hold of it?
So we published it on LinkedIn. So one of the best ways to do, if you look me up on LinkedIn and you can see the Distilled Consumer Trends report there, or just drop me a line on LinkedIn.
And if someone is going to drop you a line about the new ways of serving liquid in a beautiful and sustainable way, what kind of message gets a reply out of you?
Oh, I try to be good at responding to all of the messages. But certainly, like, referencing this podcast would be a great way of making me notice it.
Mark, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Hi, just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days, or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's T-O-M at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.